You're very welcome back.
Parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, recruiting and supporting foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
You can keep your texts coming to 53106, that'll cost 30 cents. And email afternoon@newstalk.com. We'll take a look at some more of them a little bit later on. But delighted to say that David Carey, psychologist and dean at the College of Progressive Education, joins us to go through some of your questions for the parenting slot. And as always, if you have questions for this, afternoon@newstalk.ie is the address. David, great to see you.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well indeed.
Good.
I suspect parenting slots get more busy this time of the year.
Yes, that's for sure. As do referrals.
Yes.
To psychologists. Parents start pushing the panic button, you know. I think my child has this, that, or the other, or whatever.
It's also the time, isn't it, when people try and put right anything they might be worried about if they think they're in the wrong school or the wrong teacher or the wrong class.
Yeah,
this is when they're going to wade in and try and sort things out.
It's so difficult these days, isn't it? We want so badly to get it right instead of trying to just relax and make a few mistakes along the way and no harm done, really, usually.
No, fingers crossed. I think almost every single one of these questions today has some element to it that I'm fascinated by for my own personal reasons.
Right.
So we wade straight in. First one from a listener says, my 11-year-old son is repeating fifth class due to age only. He is very bright and mature for his age, but the school made this decision. I'm worried how this is going to impact him as he's going to be removed from his friends. The decision is made and he starts back this week. How can I help him through this?
Well, let's take a look at the research on this because, believe it or not, probably between 10 and 20,000 pieces of research appear in the literature about the impact on what we call grade retention.
Yeah.
None of them overwhelmingly support grade retention as being a useful intervention for the vast majority of children. None of them support the usefulness of grade retention for children with any learning difficulties. On that, we're abundantly clear. So in regards to this little 11-year-old fellow, let's assume he has no known learning difficulties. Will he be harmed by having repeated fifth class? Probably not. Most people that have repeated a year in primary school aren't irreparably damaged by it. Sometimes they have a residue of some bad feelings about it later in adult life. Many of them end up saying, oh, I repeated, you know, fourth class or whatever. It did me no harm. So there's no reason for this parent to be alarmed. However, I'm concerned because we're told that the school made the decision.
Mm.
Now, interestingly, parents, there is a department circular that addresses the entire issue of when and how a child should be retained in primary school. It's circular 3205, I think. I could be wrong on that. You can just look at the department's website and look up circular on grade retention. You'll find it there. The circular is quite interesting, Tom,
yeah,
because it says children should not be retained or made to repeat a year in primary school unless there is a significant difficulty. Second, it says that that difficulty must be noted and documented. Third, it stipulates that a written plan must be devised that stipulates what will be done differently during the year of retention as opposed to the year previous.
Okay.
It further goes on to say that no child should be retained in sixth class under any circumstances, that no child should switch schools in sixth class for the purpose of retention. Now, the reason that circular was devised and whomever or what committee wrote it was because they looked at the literature. Some things we know. Children who have learning difficulties who are retained in primary school are at a higher risk for early school leaving than other children. Higher risk. That doesn't mean they will leave school early. The risk factor is higher. Children with learning difficulties do not benefit at all from repeating the same year with the same methodology, the same learning resources, the same assessment methods. something different must be done. And that's what the circular addresses. Now, these are guidelines. This is where we run into all kinds of pitfalls with education, and that we have massive numbers of guidelines, none of which are enshrined in any kind of legislation, so they don't need to be followed. I would wager that there's a lot of primary school teachers out there and principals who aren't even aware of this particular circular. Now, if it's been superseded by another one, someone please inform me.
I'm wondering why this happens. Why would the school, well, for instance, is it a point that you have to be a particular age to go to secondary?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I'm not entirely sure of that. The mandatory age of schooling is 6 to 16. I don't know if there's a mandatory age for entry into second level. Maybe one of our listeners can tell us that.
But that's the only reason I can see that you would think that your child, when they get to the end of sixth class, are too young in themselves to go into...
Okay, that raises an interesting point because I hear this a lot. Maturity.
Yeah.
Right? He or she is immature for their age. Let's look at the word. What is a mature organism? It's one that's fully evolved and fully developed to its maximum state of potential, after which it will enter a state of entropy and eventually decay. That's what maturity
is. That's a pretty excellent definition off the top of your head.
I think it is.
I'm very impressed.
Well, I rehearsed this. Can we have such a thing as a mature child or human being? No. We're all growing and evolving. The curriculum, and it states this, by the way, in the very first, what was once a printed volume to the Revised Primary School Curriculum, 1998, says that the curriculum is flexible and adaptable and can be differentiated to meet the needs of every child in every classroom. Differentiation is a key concept. What will we do different to help child A learn as opposed to all the other children? Will we use different resources? Will we use different assessment technologies? Will we use different methodologies of instruction, etc.? I'm not assuming that any of this is easy, but it is, however, the responsibility of educators. Easy doesn't enter into the equation. So whether it be difficult or not, it must be done. I see no reason to retain children in any year in primary school, to be honest. None.
So there, to this listener who's been presented this as it's done, this is it now, he starts back this week, what should they do? Should they go to the school? Should they start saying, this isn't done?
It's done now. And the school is not going to change its mind. No school in their right mind is going to say, oops, we made a mistake. Yes, Mrs. Carey, we'll put him into sixth class now.
Okay.
Because that just sets the message is out there now, you know. So they're going to stick with it. What this parent has to do is try to inoculate and ensure that their boy feels good about himself, that he is able to matriculate and make new friends in fifth class. Most of his classmates have moved on now to sixth. That doesn't mean he won't see them. They're still in school. He can mix with them on the yard at break time if the school rules and regulations permit the mixing. Usually they do. Senior cycle in primary school, they're all in one part of the yard. The junior cycle, they're in another. I don't see any huge reason to be unduly alarmed. I would, however, encourage this parent to go in reasonably and say, oh, I heard this smart aleck on the radio the other day say there's a circular about all this.
Yeah.
Where's my piece of paper that says what you're going to do differently? And now let's take a look at what you will do differently. I would want to know why this boy was being, was it a result of maturity? I don't even believe that's a reasonable concept. If he had learning difficulties, if his literacy development or numeracy was well below that of other children, then let's make a plan and let's put it in writing. What are we going to do to support him that we do going to do a little bit differently this year? Let's keep it reasonable, even if it's just one page Albert Reynolds bullet point kind of thing. Let's get it down on paper. That's what needs to happen. If that happens, all will go reasonably smoothly, I predict.
Okay. Next one for you. My daughter is 9 and has become a very jealous person. If her cousins or her friends have something that she doesn't, then she throws tantrums until she gets it. She can be very moody with people and will fight with friends because they have something she deems to be better than hers. She can say quite mean things about people as a result. I've noticed she's been excluded from birthday parties and I'm worried when her birthday comes around in October that nobody will come. It's an awful trait. They need to nip it in the bud. I try and use a reward system for when she demands new things, so I try to make her work for it. I tell her she should be happy and that her friend has the new toy, and isn't she lucky that her friend is sharing it with her? She's just becoming so selfish that I don't think it's getting through to her. What do I do? Concerned mum, brackets, who is starting to dislike her daughter.
I'm quite concerned that you're starting to dislike your daughter. Our responsibility as parents is to cherish, love, nurture, and guide our children, not to get so frustrated that we don't like them anymore. That's a horrible thing. I can guarantee you that if you're starting to dislike your daughter, she knows it. She feels it, and she's internalizing it. Now, it sounds to me like this little 9-year-old has some self-regulation issues. She's got some difficulty inhibiting her responses. Her emotional regulation is not what it ought to be, and we need to guide and support her to develop those skills. I'd like you to talk to teacher this year and find out what's happening in the classroom. Have her observed on yard time as well. And break time. Find out what's going on. Does she have friends? Is this just happening in the community? Are other children setting her up? Because that can happen. We all know that. Sometimes a child who's a little bit irritable and disregular can be set up by other children so that their triggers slip and they explode. So this needs some observation, some consideration. You're using a lot of very pejorative language here about the child. She's jealous. Mm-hmm. Mean, et cetera, et cetera. I don't like these words. It's not a good part of a parent's vocabulary to use these kind of labels against your child. I'm not saying about, deliberately saying against your child. This will interfere with the relationship. Guaranteed she's picking it up. Guaranteed. She can't be bold and doing wrong things all the time. There has to be some time she's doing well. Let's start noticing that. Let's encourage it. There is a good book, by the way. I've mentioned it numerous times. 1, 2, 3, Magic, A Guide to Effective Discipline, Children 2 through 12. You can get it in most bookshops around the country, easily available on Amazon as well. 1, 2, 3, A Guide to Effective Discipline. It's a simple, practical method to help children gain better self-regulation skills, and it works when you follow the program, but you have to follow the program.
Well, I'll be buying it on the way home.
For yourself, Tom, or for myself?
For myself, yes. I'll report back.
Yeah, please do.
There's too many things, too many self-regulation issues. That's one of ours. right, my nephew, my nephew is 2.5, and we find he loses it so easily when my sister or anyone else tries to enforce any kind of rule, like no tricycle in the kitchen, for example. He completely loses it, and it's really hard to bring him out of it. Any ideas on how to keep him calm? He's generally a wonderful little man. He just bursts in. He gets so upset when things don't go his way. It's just the terrible twos.
Well, we call it the terrible twos for a very good reason, and you're living with it. So I think, what do you do? Okay, you keep your interventions and your discipline low arousal. Don't lose the head. Don't raise your voice. Don't do the old eye rolls. Don't do, how many times have I told you, son, that you're not to put that triangle? I'm sick to death of it. Now you don't have your triangle for 2 days. None of that really works effectively with 2-year-olds or 12-year-olds or 22-year-olds or 42-year-olds, by the way. We don't like that. Low arousal interventions. This is, again, where the book comes in really handy. 1, 2, 3, Magic, 2 through 12. It works a charm. How is it he has access to the tricycle when it's in the kitchen? Can we organize our space in the house in such a way that he can't bring it into the kitchen? That avoids the near occasion of the problem, doesn't it?
It does. You mentioned that book again. That's twice now. I've no excuse.
I did not write the book, by the way.
No, I've gathered that.
No royalties.
I like the
involved idea
of the terrible twos, but I can't help suspect that there's also tarsome
threes. Did
you threes,
have those? With
fearsome
your
fours. Fearsome frightening fives. Scary sixes.
Frustrating forties.
It just goes on. Yes.
Yeah. There's no end.
It doesn't
do. We are frail and imperfect human beings.
And it just changes as you get on.
Absolutely.
We are.
Yeah.
We've loads more to come. So if you have further questions, afternoonnews.ie is the address. We've more from David after this. You're very welcome back. We have David Carey, psychologist and dean of the College of Progressive Education, with us for your parenting questions. AfternoonNewsTalk.com for them. Bit of reaction on the staying back issue. Honestly, says one listener, if your child is young, no matter how bright he is, keep him back. Once he hits transition year, you'll be much happier. It's what starts going on outside of the classroom at this stage that will worry you more, says one, speaking from experience. And the listener says, I wonder, is the student being retained to keep school numbers up and therefore keep another teacher due to school numbers?
Ooh, interesting.
That couldn't really be going on, could it?
God forbid, no.
No.
No, no, no.
I hope not. But the idea that that person is saying, keep him back if the child is young, you don't agree with that. You've already said that.
Well, I think we have to look at the evidence, unfortunately. I mean, as a scientist, we've got to say, what does the research inform us? Do children benefit in any way, in terms of that year or longitudinally, from grade retention? And there is not a significant, in fact, there is a very insignificant body of evidence that points in that direction. So I don't know what else to say, except that's your opinion and fine, but it flies against the literature. And I'm not talking about four or five studies. We're talking about tens of thousands of studies.
Okay. One text is not a question, but I have to read it out. I have to share my news. We've got a baby, a real baby, of our very own. It has two perfect arms, swinging little, kicking legs, beautiful smile, the most cuddly little body. I love him very much. That's my boy. So there's somebody who'll be asking you questions for years to come, hopefully.
Well, that's someone who doesn't sound like they'll ever be asking questions, because
yeah,
they love their little baby so much.
A lot of love there. Next question for you. My darling 9-year-old daughter is the youngest of five children and the only girl. Oh. My problem is she simply won't go to bed. I end up going to bed before her most nights, even on school nights. This has become her routine. I don't know how to break it at this stage. Please help.
Oh God, 9 years old, the youngest of five and the only girl. Mm. That cannot be easy.
No.
That just can't be easy. Now, questions arise here. Is she getting a good night's sleep regardless of what time she goes to bed? Is she awakened, feeling refreshed and healthy? Is she alert? Is she eating properly? How is she doing in school? What do teachers have to say about her learning profile, etc.? If everything is fine, there isn't a heck of a lot you can do. This could be a body clock issue, Tom. You know, she's just not ready for bed at the time you think she ought to be. We don't know what time this is, by the way.
Yeah.
So you're going to bed before her. I would rather see that happen than staying up to comfort and cajole and entertain her and then ending up with the battle of bedtime that goes on endlessly and a parent being sleep deprived as a result. So you're probably handling it reasonably well. Let's do some observation here, Mom and Dad. Is she overstimulated at bedtime? Is she watching television, doing screen time? Is she playing vigorously? There needs to be a settling time in the evening for children. It doesn't have to be total quiet, but it's a time when we calm our household. We all kind of settle in, maybe a little television, no necessary harm in that. But it's preparation and transition to bedtime. The next transition after settling in time often involves getting into your gym jams, brushing your teeth. Mommy and Daddy will read you a book, and that's where choices often are very helpful. Would you like to get into your jammies now, and then Mommy will read you a book? Or would you like Daddy to read you a book, and then you get into your jammies? Choices are good for children, as opposed to diktats and orders. Don't know what's going on. If she's happy and healthy and learning well and playing well with other children,
tired.
Don't worry. If
yep.
she's not tired and doesn't look well, then you've got to tackle the problem.
And if she's grumpy.
I wish I knew what time she's going to bed,
yeah.
by the way.
We don't, sadly. A child kept back doesn't count for teacher's numbers or capitation. So there you go.
Okay, so we've debunked that problem.
Yeah. Hearing that a mother would say she's starting to dislike her child is very sad. I have no children. She doesn't know how lucky she is, says Jesse. Mm. Next one for you. We were on a family trip 2 weekends ago and we accidentally drove away from a petrol station without our daughter. She is 7 and the youngest
pay
of 3.
For this a long time to
a
come,
long
huh?
time. We were barely 30 seconds away when we realized it was the end of the trip. We were exhausted. The kids were hyper and rowdy. We thought we'd have everyone in the car, but obviously not. We went straight back, collected our hysterical girl. It's 2 weeks later and every day she's worried we will forget her. Getting out of the car, she says, "Don't forget about me," or "Remember, I'm coming home with you." She has a panicked look on her face if she loses sight of us in a shop or whatever. Even at home, if I'm upstairs and she's downstairs, she'll call out to make sure we're there. I'm worried we really scarred her with this. We have apologised and apologised. We need to do more, it seems. How can we comfort and support her to these fears?
Oh, God, we shouldn't laugh. But it is, there's a humorous side
to this. I can imagine it.
The reality is, this is a story that your daughter will be sharing with her children and grandchildren long after you're gone. Because, you know, do you know what your mom did? Or you know what your grand did to me one time? And she left me, and it won't be just 30 seconds. It will then be an hour and a half and 2 hours, and I was in danger.
Yes.
You'll pay.
You'll pay.
Now, it's only 2 weekends ago. She has been upset, of course, and she got a very nasty fright. So you must expect a little bit of upset and distress to creep into the window here. Best guess, it will go away. Do not over-reassure and play into it endlessly. You've apologized. That's enough. You don't have to keep endlessly apologizing. Give her a little transition object that might be one of yours, perhaps a scarf or a glove or something that she can carry around the house for when she goes upstairs to her room. It has your perfume or cologne scent on it or whatever, and that's a nice little neurobiological reminder of your constant presence. I think this will go away.
We wouldn't have a time frame on what to expect on that, would we? There isn't for children who've been left in petrol stations long, that it normally takes 2 months or 3 months or 4 months.
Did you ever lock one of your children in the car and go into the house? I did that once myself and my wife.
Oh, thankfully.
My God, we had to break into the car because we hadn't even locked the keys in the car.
God.
Yeah.
No.
Bridget, if you're out there listening, you don't remember that, so happened, Bridget.
I thought, God, he's still apologizing. He's saying don't apologize, and here he is, years later.
Exactly. Parental guilt.
Yes.
Lasts forever.
Right. Could you please, please, please tell me how to stop our 20-month-old boy biting everything? He has a full set of teeth, and it seriously hurts. We're covered in hickeys. He isn't speaking at all, so we don't know if he understands us telling him to stop biting. I literally have no idea what to do. His words simply are not working.
I think a stern look and just say stop, because the word biting may be a little bit of a concept he doesn't have yet. Make sure you have an orange handy at all times when you're carrying him around or you're near him. Give him the orange to bite. That's a healthy thing to bite. Has a bit of a similar texture to human flesh in some ways. And you'll just have to remind, he's 20 months old. Is he teething?
It sounds
What's
like he's well
on?
Through the teething. It sounds like he's serious that have teeth on him.
Look.
You can't say ah to him. That works with dogs, I know. Stop eating furniture if you do that.
I didn't know that, actually.
It's very effective.
Is it? You must point the finger like that,
yes,
too.
Yes, a little gentle, because he is only a pup.
Okay.
It works very effectively.
Well, then maybe try that with your child. Instead of usually a cross expression and no will change the behavior. This, like, 20 months old. We're going to get these things.
You will. Hickeys everywhere.
I think that's a perfect excuse now for having a hickey when you go to work. My 20-month-old did it.
Yes.
Yeah. No one will believe you.
Can you ask your parenting expert some advice on how to curb the appetite of our 6-year-old? It would be fair to say she is obsessed by food. When I pick her up from school or after school, the first thing she says to me is she is hungry and gets really upset when I gently explain to her that we're going to be home and having our dinner soon rather than having a snack. I found out that she was lying to the caregivers in the after school when one would be with her, with the other children, that would other them. She would say that they had never given her lunch, so at one stage she was getting to eat twice. I don't want to give her a complex, but how can I stop her from overeating when I'm not there?
What's she overeating on? Is she overweight? Is she height and weight proportionate? Is she a generally health ill? You know, often when we
let's say she isn't. You know, that because
she isn't what? Overweight.
Let's say she is overweight. Let's say you can see it.
Ah, okay. Well, then you begin to have healthy and nutritious snacks available freely in the house at all time. You get rid of all the junk stuff.
Okay.
And that goes for, unfortunately, the rule has to apply for everyone, so it may discomfort some. But the needs of the one in this case probably overweigh the needs of the many. We had a question like this before, actually, about a serious food obsession. I think it was a boy a couple of weeks back who was constantly hungry. I think you might want to talk to the GP about this, get some advice. Maybe a trip to a nutritionist may help. Don't know what's going on here. Obviously, if I was a psychoanalyst, we would begin to say, oh, this is a child fixated at the oral stage. They're incredibly needy. They're getting their needs met through constant overeating and constant hunger. We don't generally go down that road anymore, but that does not necessarily mean that there aren't psychological factors.